Hi, Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 1143, The Uyghurs and the Destabilization of China, Part 1. This is being recorded on August 2nd of the year 2020. We will be going back to our series about the COVID-19 pandemic called BioPsyop Apocalypse Now. In order, I think, to gain a better understanding of the political environment in which that pandemic took place, we're going to be taking a look at a major element of both covert and overt operations against China. There has been a lot of publicity about the Uyghurs, or some pronounce that Uyghurs. You will see that variously spelled as U-I-G-H-U-R or U-Y-G-H-U-R. They are a Turkophone, that is to say they speak a Turkic language. They are largely Muslim. They are resident in Xinjiang province in China, which not incidentally is also very mineral resource rich, including a lot of petroleum. We've examined the Uyghurs in the past. They have been used as a vehicle for destabilization against China since the early 1950s, really before that, if one takes into account some of the activities of the Uyghurs in connection with the Kuomintang and Chiang Kai-shek. We have spoken about some of the political affiliations of the Uyghurs in the past. They have the most profound connections to U.S. intelligence. They have many fascist connections. Some of the fascist connections involve fascist pan-Turkish elements, including the Grey Wolves and its parent pan-Turkish slash Fascist National Action Party or National Movement Party, and including Alparslan Türkeş. The Uyghurs also have links to Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, and other violent Muslim Brotherhood terrorist offshoot organizations. And as we will see, a German-born end times Christian named Adrian, A-D-R-I-A-N, Zenz, Z-E-N-Z, who is one of the leading propagandists about the Uyghurs and China. He comes to his position as an allegedly authoritative spokesman, certainly an influential one, by virtue of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. That is an offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee and the OUNB milieu, the OUNB fascist Ukrainian milieu that we've looked at so many times in the past. As we study the Uyghurs and the dubious claims of, you know, millions of Uyghurs being interned in re-education camps in Xinjiang province, one of the things to note is not only the fascist connections of the Uyghurs historically, but the fact that the claims that have dominated the news media all have their origin with U.S. intelligence fronts or cutouts. Some of those are the Jamestown Foundation, founded in the 1980s on William Casey's watch, the National Endowment for Democracy, co-founded by William Casey, is another, the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, which is an organization that has made some of the most widely distributed claims and who based their estimates on interviews with a grand total of 8 Uyghur nationals, and also organizations like Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia. All of these are either actual U.S. intelligence fronts per se, or have well-documented and long-standing links to U.S. intelligence. Again, the claims that, you know, there are millions of Chinese, millions of Uyghurs rather being detained in China, are dubious not only because of the nature of the sources, again, U.S. intelligence cutouts, organizations and individuals with fanatical ideological views, either Muslim fundamentalist slash terrorist or Christian fundamentalist, all of those overlapping historical fascist groups such as the OUNB and ABN, Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations milieu. The methodology involved in generating these claims is also unscientific, I guess one could say. Again, the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, which is one of the organizations that has generated these claims, derived their data from an interview with a total of 8 individuals. And again, an individual that we will be looking at, the German-born Adrian Zenz, again, a fundamentalist Christian, an end-times Christian, and Nazi fellow traveler, an associate of the milieu of the OUNB. These are dominant sources for the claims that are making their way into the news media. In turn, these are coming from the regime change machinery associated with the World Uyghur Congress. Or maybe it's Uyghur World Congress. Hang on one second. It is, in fact, the World Uyghur Congress. That is an organization, again, funded by the National Endowment for Democracy, a U.S. intelligence cutout. And it also has many links with not only right-wing politicians, but various intelligence cutouts from Radio Free Europe to Radio Liberty, the aforementioned National Endowment for Democracy, and elements that we have spoken about in the past. The context that we are presenting here is part of the context in which the COVID-19 pandemic, I think, must be understood. Had that occurred in a vacuum, well, who knows? But it did not. It occurred in the middle of a full court press against China on all fronts. And as we have seen in the past, there are significant links between laboratories involved in developing viruses of the SARS-CoV type, CoV-2 type, and elements of U.S. intelligence. DARPA organization, the Pentagon's brain, as it has been called, has been deeply involved in researching bat-borne coronaviruses in and around China. So we will be getting back to the BioPsyop Apocalypse Now series in 2 or 3 weeks, but I think in order to fully understand not only the context of the COVID-19 pandemic, but also to understand an element of the next major focal point in the BioPsyop Apocalypse Now series, the wealth concentration virus, I think understanding the corporate operations being mounted against China, in this case the Uyghurs, and how that in turn is being manipulated by the J. Kyle Bass, Steve Bannon, Tommy Hicks Jr., Robert Mercer milieu, that is making a great deal of money, including from things that could be predicted by some of the covert operations that are, and overt operations being launched against China. Exemplifying the type of claim that we're seeing from the New York Times of July 21st of 2020 by Anna Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N, U.S. imposes more sanctions for human rights abuses in China. The Trump administration on Monday barred 11 new Chinese companies from purchasing American technology and products without a special license, saying the firms were complicit in human rights violations in China's campaign targeting Muslim minorities in the Xinjiang region. Skipping down. Human rights groups and journalists had documented the campaign of mass detentions carried out by the Chinese government in Xinjiang, in which 1 million or more members of Muslim and other minority groups had been placed into large internment camps intended to increase their loyalty to the Communist Party. What we should be seeing here is allegedly, because again, the claims really come from suspect sources and are based, as we will see, on some very faulty methodology. The Chinese are flat out denying that they have detention camps. They represent the facilities in Xinjiang as professional training and vocational training centers. As we have seen in many programs, the Uyghurs themselves have been used as destabilization elements in China, and there have been a number of violent incidents against Han Chinese, and as we will see in our second program, against Asians in other countries as well, including an attack by Grey Wolf members on some Koreans in Turkey, something that was not seen as a problem. In fact, one fellow said, well, they all have slanty eyes, you know, so what difference does it make? I think in a way that is characteristic of the ethical and intellectual foundation of what is frankly a propaganda offensive at one level and a covert slash overt destabilization effort, covert and slash overt destabilization effort against China. Again, as we take a look at where some of these claims are coming from, we'll take a look at the World Uyghur Congress, a U.S. intelligence-financed regime change outfit in our second program. However, taking a look at the claims upon which the stories and propaganda to which we have been subjected are based, these come again from organizations with documented links to U.S. intelligence and or completely financed by the U.S. government. One of these is the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders that is financed by the U.S. government and gets money from the National Endowment for Democracy, co-founded by William Casey, a U.S. intelligence cutout. Casey also founded the Jamestown Foundation, and it was on his watch in the early 1980s that the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an offshoot of the OUNB milieu and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, was founded as well. And again, note that one of the individuals who has been most effective in terms of distributing his information and has had a lot of publicity is the German-born Adrian Zenz, Z-E-N-Z, again, an end times Christian and someone whose, quote, scholarship, unquote, on China comes from the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, again, an offshoot of the OUNB milieu. A good article on the veracity of the claims of millions of the Uyghurs being detained and the sources who have been generating these claims comes from the Gray Zone blog of December 21st of 2019. This is by Ajit Singh, S-I-N-G-H, and Max Blumenthal, and it is headlined, China Detaining Millions of Uyghurs, Serious Problems with Claims by U.S.-backed NGO and Far-Right Researcher Led by God, unquote, against Beijing. The U.S. House of Representatives passed the Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act on December 3rd, legislation which calls for the Donald Trump administration to impose sanctions against China over allegations that Beijing has detained millions of Muslim minority Uyghurs in the western region of Xinjiang. To drum up support for the sanctions bill, Western governments and media outlets have portrayed the People's Republic as a human rights violator on par with Nazi Germany. Republican Representative Chris Smith, for instance, denounced the Chinese government for what he called the, quote, mass internment of millions on a scale not seen since the Holocaust, unquote, in modern-day concentration camps, unquote. The claim that China has detained millions of ethnic Uyghurs in its Xinjiang region is repeated with increasing frequency, but little scrutiny is ever applied to the claim. Yet a closer look at the figure and how it was obtained reveals a serious deficiency in data. While this extraordinary claim is treated as unassailable in the West, it is in fact based on two highly dubious studies, unquote. One more time. While this extraordinary claim is treated as unassailable in the West, it is, in fact, based on two highly dubious studies, unquote. The first, by the U.S. government-backed Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, formed its estimate by interviewing a grand total of 8 people. The second study relied on flimsy media reports and speculation. That second study was offered by Adrian Zenz, Z-E-N-Z, a far-right fundamentalist Christian who opposes homosexuality and gender equality, supports scriptural spanking, unquote, of children, and believes he is led by God, unquote, on a, quote, mission, unquote, against China. As Washington ratchets up pressure on China, Zenz has been lifted out of obscurity and transformed almost overnight into a go-to pundit on Xinjiang. He has testified before Congress, provided commentary and outlets from the Wall Street Journal to Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, and delivering expert quotes in the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists' recent China Cables report, unquote. His Twitter bio notes that he is, quote, moving across the Atlantic, unquote, from his native Germany. Before Gray Zone editor Max Blumenthal questions Zenz about his religious mission, unquote, at a recent event about Xinjiang inside the U.S. Capitol, Zenz had received almost entirely uncritical promotion from Western media. The Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, which first popularized the millions detained figure, has also been able to operate without a hint of media scrutiny. The millions detained figure was first popularized by a Washington, D.C.-based NGO that is backed by the U.S. government, the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, or CHRD. In a 2018 report submitted to the UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, often misrepresented in Western media as an actual UN-authored report, again, it is not, CHRD, quote, estimated that roughly 1 million members of ethnic Uyghurs who have been sent to re-education, unquote, detention camps, and roughly 2 million have been forced to attend, quote, re-education programs in Xinjiang. According to CHRD, this figure was, quote, based on interviews and limited data, unquote. That is an understatement, as we will see. While CHRB states that it interviewed dozens of ethnic Uyghurs in the course of its study, their enormous estimate was ultimately based on interviews with exactly 8 Uyghur individuals. Based on this absurdly small sample of research subjects in an area whose total population is 20 million, CHRB, quote, extrapolated estimates, unquote, that, again, quoting, at least 10% of villagers are being detained in re-education camps, and 20% are being forced to attend day-evening re-education camps in the villages or townships, totaling 30% in both types of camps, unquote. Applying these estimated rates to the entirety of Xinjiang, CHRD arrived at the figures submitted to the UN claiming that 1 million ethnic Uyghurs have been detained in re-education camps, unquote, and 2 million more have been, quote, forced to attend day-evening re-education sessions, again, based on 8 interviews. Thanks to questionable sources like the U.S. government finance CHRB, the U.S. government has accused China of, quote, arbitrarily detaining 800,000 to possibly more than 2 million Uyghurs, ethnic Kazakhs, and other Muslims in internment camps designed to erase religious and ethnic identities, unquote. Testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in 2018, State Department official Scott Busby stated that this is, quote, the U.S. government assessment backed by an intelligence community and open source reporting, unquote. The Chinese government has rejected U.S. allegations and claims that it has in fact established, quote, vocational education and training centers to prevent the breeding and spread of terrorism and religious extremism, unquote. The Chinese Foreign Ministry has stated that, quote, there are no so-called re-education camps in Xinjiang at all. The vocational education and training centers legally operated in Xinjiang aim to help a small number of people affected by terrorist and extremist ideologies and equip them with skills so that they can be self-reliant and reintegrate into society, unquote. In its mounting pressure campaign against China, the U.S. is not only relying on CHRB for data, it is directly funding its operations. As Ben Norton and Ajit Singh previously reported for the Gray Zone, CHRB receives significant financial support from Washington's regime change arm, the National Endowment for Democracy. The NGO has spent years campaigning on behalf of extreme right-wing opposition figures who celebrate colonialism and call for the, quote, westernization of China. The second key source for claims that China has detained millions of Uyghur Muslims is the German national Adrian Zenz. Zenz is a senior fellow on China studies at the far-right Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which was established by the U.S. government in 1983. Again, like MEB, and like, as we'll see, the Jamestown Foundation, on William Casey's watch. We're going to come back to William Casey maybe 2 programs from now. More about the heritage of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation is an outgrowth of the National Captive Nations Committee, a group founded by Ukrainian nationalist Lev Dobryansky to lobby against any effort for détente with the Soviet Union. Its co-chairman, Yaroslav Stetsko, was a top leader of the fascist OUNB militia that fought alongside Nazi Germany during its occupation of Ukraine in World War II. He actually, Yaroslav Stetsko, was the nominal head of state of the Ukrainian satellite government that fought alongside Nazi Germany. He also was head of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and became head of the OUNB with the apparent provocation assassination of Stefan Bandera. We'll talk more about the ABN later on, either in this program or our next show, because there are links between the ABN and the Pan-Turkist movement and the Uyghurs. More again about the, reviewing again some more about the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Lev Dobryansky is someone, by the way, that we've looked at in many programs. We took a look at him in, for the record, 876. He was one of the people generating the, disinformation that the KGB trained Lee Harvey Oswald as part of the same assassination training program that trained Bogdan Stashinsky, who assassinated Stefan Bandera. Dobryansky and his daughter Paula have been very, very active on the political scene. More about her in just a minute. But again, Lev Dobryansky is someone that we looked at in For the Record program number 876. He helped to generate this information about the assassination of President Kennedy. The victims of, reviewing again this last paragraph, and then we're going to continue. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation is an outgrowth of the National Captive Nations Committee, a group founded by Ukrainian nationalist Lev Dobryansky to lobby against any effort for détente with the Soviet Union. Its co-chairman, Yaroslav Stetsko, was a top leader of the fascist OUNB militia that fought alongside Nazi Germany during its occupation of Ukraine in World War II. Together, the two helped found the World Anti-Communist League that was described by journalist Joe Comison as, quote, the organizational haven for neo-Nazis, fascists, and anti-Semitic extremists from two dozen countries. We looked at that, by the way, in, among other shows, AFA Program 14 and AFA 15. Continuing, the lack of that is. Today, Dobryansky's daughter Paula sits on the board of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. A former Reagan and George H.W. official and signatory of the original Project for a New American Century document, Paula Dobryansky has become a fixture in neoconservative circles on Capitol Hill. She, by the way, also headed up the State Department's Tibet desk for quite some time. More about Tibet either later on in this show or in our next program. From its office in Washington, the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation agitates for regime change from Venezuela to the periphery of China, advancing the double genocide theory that rewrites the history of the Holocaust and posits communism as a deadly evil on a par with Hitlerian fascism. Zenz's politicized research on Xinjiang and Tibet has proven one of this right-wing group's most effective weapons. In September of 2018, Zenz wrote an article published in the Central Asian Survey Journal concluding that, quote, Xinjiang's total re-education internment figure may be estimated at just over 1 million, unquote. A condensed version of the article was initially published by the Jamestown Foundation, a neoconservative think tank founded during the height of the Cold War by Reagan administration personnel with the support of then CIA Director William J. Casey. Like the CHRB, Zenz arrived at his estimate over 1 million, unquote, in a dubious manner. He based his estimate on a single report by Istiqlal TV, Istiqlal TV, a Uyghur exile media organization based in Turkey, which was republished by Newsweek, Japan. Far from an impartial journalistic organization, Istiqlal TV advances the separatist cause while playing host to an assortment of extremist figures. One such character who often appears on Istiqlal TV is Abdulkadir Yapaquan. That's A-B-D-U-L-K-A-D-I-R, last name capital Y-A-P-U-Q-U-A-N. Again, one such character who often appears on Istiqlal TV is Abdulkadir Yapaquan, a reported leader of the East Turkestan Islamic Movement, or ETIM, a separatist group that aims to establish an independent homeland in Xinjiang called East Turkestan. ETIM has been designated as a terrorist organization with ties to Al-Qaeda by the U.S., the European Union, and the U.N. Security Council's Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee. The Associated Press has reported that since, quote, 2013, thousands of Uyghurs have traveled to Syria to train with the Uyghur militant group Turkestan Islamic Party and fight alongside Al-Qaeda, unquote, with several hundred of the Uyghurs joining the Islamic State, unquote. The Turkestan Islamic Party, or TIP, has been among the most recalcitrant forces operating in the Al-Qaeda-controlled Idlib province, rejecting all ceasefire efforts while indoctrinating children into militancy. TIP's leadership has called on foreign Muslims to wage jihad in Syria, publishing an online recruitment video in 2018 that celebrated the 9/11 attacks as holy retaliation against a decadent United States awash in homosexuality and sin. According to the Los Angeles Times, Yaqub Kwan is a, quote, regular guest on Istiqlal TV, where his interviews often extended into hours-long emotional tirades against China. Turkish journalist Abdullah Bozkurt reported that Istiqlal TV has also hosted fanatical anti-Semites like Nuridan Yildiz, Y-I-L-D-I-Z, who in an interview on the network, quote, called for armed jihad not only in China's autonomous Xinjiang region, but all over the world, and described China as a nation of savages, worse even than the Jews, unquote. The Istiqlal TV report relied on by Zenz for his figures published an unverifiable table of, quote, re-education detainee figures allegedly, quote, leaked, unquote, by Chinese authorities, totaling 892,000 individuals in 68 Xinjiang counties as of the spring of 2018. Zenz pads this data by citing reports from Radio Free Asia, a U.S.-funded news agency created by the CIA during the Cold War to propagandize against China. The Uyghur Human Rights Act, recently passed by Congress, mandates that the U.S. Agency for Global Media, the government parent of Radio Free Asia, to report on Xinjiang, including assessments of Chinese propaganda strategies. Again, this last statement. The Uyghur Human Rights Act, recently passed by Congress, mandates that the U.S. Agency for Global Media, the governmental parent of Radio Free Asia, to report on Xinjiang, including assessments of Chinese propaganda strategies, unquote. With his cobbling of questionable sources, Zenz extrapolates an extremely broad estimate, quote, at anywhere between several hundred thousand and just over 1 million, unquote. While admitting that, quote, there is no certainty to his estimate, he has concluded that it is nevertheless reasonable to speculate, unquote. He attempted to evade personal responsibility for the figure's questionable reliability, however, by stating, quote, the accuracy of this estimate is, of course, predicated on the supposed validity of the stated sources. Again, reports from Radio Free Asia basically come from the government / CIA, and Zenz has also, again, relied on Istiqlal TV, broadcasting basically material from the East Turkestan Islamic movement associated with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. Continuing. As time goes on, Zenz continues to inflate his speculative estimate of Uyghur detainees. Speaking at an event organized by the U.S. mission in Geneva in March of 2019, Zenz stated, quote, although it is speculative, it seems appropriate to estimate that up to 1.5 million ethnic minorities have been detained by China in Xinjiang, unquote. Zenz bumped up his estimate again in the November 2019 interview with Radio Free Asia, claiming China was detaining 1.8 million people. In an interview with Der Spiegel, Zenz claimed that China has effectively outlawed the practice of Islam in Xinjiang. Quote, anyone in Xinjiang who engages in any type of religious practice, anyone who even has a single Quran verse saved on their mobile phone, will be subjected to a brutal process of re-education without trial, unquote, he maintained. These incendiary claims have vaulted Zenz to the status of international expert, unquote, on Xinjiang. Earned him invites to testify before U.S. Congress and the Canadian Parliament, and to deliver commentary in major U.S. media outlets, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, and Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!. Zenz has also been featured by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or ICIJ, as, quote, the leading authority legitimizing their recent China Cables investigation. The ICIJ report asserts the, quote, linguists document and Xinjiang experts, including Zenz, who reviewed the documents, have expressed confidence in their authenticity, unquote. Given Zenz's habit of speculation and the questionable reliability of the lone Istiklal TV media report he relies on for his estimates, it is troubling that Western governments and media have accepted and promoted his claims without a trace of skepticism. A closer look at Zenz's own biases should magnify these concerns, as he is a full-blown evangelical end-timer who appears to believe that God has sent him on a holy crusade against the People's Republic of China. And again, I'm reminded, because it doesn't really go back to it, bear in mind that the institutional foundation for Zenz's supposed expertise on Xinjiang, China, etc., is the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an offshoot of the OUNB milieu. Continuing, a born-again Christian from Germany who claims to preach at his local church, Adrian Zenz is a lecturer at the European School of Culture and Theology. This anodyne-sounding campus is actually the German base of Columbia International University, a U.S.-based evangelical Christian seminary which considers the, quote, Bible to be the ultimate foundation and the final truth in every aspect of our lives, unquote, and whose mission is to, quote, educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ, unquote. Zenz's work on China is inspired by his biblical worldview, as he recently explained in an interview with the Wall Street Journal, quote, I feel very clearly led by God to do this, he said. I can put it this way. I am not afraid to say that. With Xinjiang, things really changed. It became like a mission or a ministry, unquote. Along with his, quote, mission, unquote, against China, heavenly guidance has apparently prompted Zenz to denounce homosexuality, gender equality, and the banning of physical punishment against children as threats to Christianity. Zenz outlined these views in a book he co-authored in 2012 titled Worthy to Escape, Why All Believers Will Not Be Raptured Before the Tribulation. In the tome, Zenz discussed the return of Jesus Christ, the coming wrath of God, and the rise of the Antichrist. Zenz predicted that the future fall of capitalism will bring to power the Antichrist within a few decades, unquote. He identified the force that will, quote, usher the Antichrist into power, unquote, as, again quoting, the economic and financial fall of Babylon, unquote. With Babylon, again, unquoting, systematically representing the world's global economic system, or capitalism, unquote. Along with the fall of capitalism, Zenz also views, quote, postmodern relativism and tolerance thinking, unquote, and their apparent promotion of homosexuality, gender equality, and nonviolent parenting to be threats to Christianity, and the, quote, the deceptive leopard-like power behind the Antichrist, unquote. Again, quoting Zenz, it is very likely that the global persecution of true believers will center on the charge that they promote, quote, intolerant views, Zenz wrote, especially related to preaching against homosexuality, unquote. Zenz argued that hate crime and anti-discrimination laws will likely play a major role in the suppression of biblical Christianity and formed part of an anti-Christian tolerance campaign, unquote, because they, quote, forbid employers to discriminate based on gender or sexual orientations, unquote. The outcome of this process is open rebellion against both God and God-given human authority structures, unquote, Zenz stated, decrying the, quote, rising numbers of countries are banning all forms of physical punishment of children, the primary scriptural method for instilling respect for authority in the young generation, and protecting them from rebellious tendencies, unquote. Zenz assures readers that, quote, true scriptural spanking is loving discipline, not violence. Another important God-given authority structure that Satan is attacking through the postmodern spirit is that of gender authority structures, unquote. Zenz continued, again quoting, through notions of gender equality, the enemy is undermining God's unique but different role assignments for men and women, unquote. Given these obscurantist right-wing views, it is not surprising that Zenz's proclaimed concern for the condition of Muslims in China does not seem to extend to Muslims elsewhere. A search of Zenz's Twitter profile returns no tweets concerning the rise of Islamophobia in the West, nor U.S. wars and drone strikes against Muslim-majority countries. The only tweet by Zenz concerning Muslims that is unrelated to China is a denial that there is a double standard in how violence is judged when committed by white people compared to Muslims. In his December 10th, 2019 testimony to the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Adrian Zenz took a victory lap of sorts for Congress's passage of the Uyghur Human Rights Act the week before, which placed new sanctions on the Chinese government. Citing the bill's success, he called for opening a new front against China with a U.S. investigation into involuntary labor in relation to Xinjiang, unquote. That same day, Zenz also appeared on a panel dedicated to Xinjiang that was hosted by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation in the U.S. Capitol Visitor Center. On hand were Republican heavyweights like Sam Brownback, the ferociously anti-LGBT, anti-abortion former governor of Kansas, and current U.S. Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, as well as top staffers of Senator Marco Rubio, the sponsor of virtually every China sanctions bill to be rubber-stamped by Congress in recent weeks. During a question-and-answer session, the Gray Zone editor Max Blumenthal asked Zenz about his religious fundamentalist During a question-and-answer session, the Gray Zone editor Max Blumenthal asked Zenz about his fundamentalist religious views and far-right politics. Zenz did not distance himself from his past statements denouncing gender equality and, quote, tolerance thinking, unquote, or his advocacy for the scriptural spanking, unquote, of children. Instead, he asserted that there was no inconsistency between those views and the quality of his research on China's Xinjiang region. Again, ironically, one of those appears to have much of his, quote, data, unquote, come from that Istiklal TV broadcast by someone with associations with Al-Qaeda and also the Islamic State. Continuing with this article from the Gray Zone, quoting Zenz, quote, I do have a diverse background and I have personal connections which I do not believe are inconsistent with my research, Zenz responded to Blumenthal. Quote, I do not support China's authoritarian methods in any way, and I do believe there's a God who is bringing judgment in different forms. The end times is a very fascinating topic, a very complex topic, and I think very relevant. And I think it is good to live aware of that, unquote. Moments later, a visibly upset young man rose from his seat to condemn the tanky Max Blumenthal, unquote. Unleashing a torrent of insults at Blumenthal, he made no attempt to refute the journalist's line of questioning. The rigorously enforced conviction on display in the politically hermetic chambers of the U.S. Capitol also encompasses the scope, also encompasses the whole of Western media, where even purportedly progressive outlets like Democracy Now! Have provided Zens with an uncritical platform. From Washington's halls of power to major newsrooms, few are willing to let inconvenient facts get in the way of a new, undeniably faith-based Cold War crusade. Again, note the prevalence of U.S. intelligence-linked, either fronts or connected institutions in generating those reports. The National Endowment for Democracy, the Jamestown Foundation, a U.S. intel front which gets funding from the National Endowment for Democracy, the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, and note that the fundamentalist end times Christian, Adrian Zenz, who is an associate, he's a fellow at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an offshoot of the OUNB milieu. He got a lot of his information from Istiklal TV, again, basically from the milieu of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. So that is something to be noted. And again, the study from the Chinese Human Rights Defenders Organization so came on the basis of interviews with 8 people. Now, one of the things that we have spoken about, and we'll come back to this, is what I've called the Earth Island Boogie. The Earth Island is that giant section of land stretching from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across all of Europe, the Middle East, the former Soviet Union, China, India. It is one huge landmass, and that landmass has most of the Earth's population, most of the Earth's natural resources. Across the center of it is a vast swath of Islamic peoples. And geopoliticians have long viewed the control of the Earth Island as the key to global domination. As we have looked at in a number of programs, including our series of programs about the Intermarium concept, the Ukraine is seen as the pivot point for the Earth Island. And in For the Record program 1103, we took a look at the presence in Hong Kong of elements of not only the Azov Battalion, but the Pravi Sector or Right Sector Front. And those organizations, Ukrainian Nazi organizations, and again, offshoots or evolved elements of the OUNB milieu that spawned the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, that is the foundation for Adrian Zenz's activism on Xinjiang. The presence in Hong Kong of the Azov Battalion people and Pravi Sector people was courtesy of the Ukrainian chapter of an EU non-governmental organization. We again looked at that in For the Record program 1103. And by way of understanding the Earth Island, the importance of Ukraine as the pivot point for control of the Earth Island, and perhaps to gain greater perspective on why we see someone like Adrian Zenz from the ABN Captive Nations Committee, the OUNB milieu. We see these same elements involved with the destabilization effort in Hong Kong as well. Another article from the Gray Zone and that was featured in Consortium News of June 10th of 2020. Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement allies with U.S. politicians who seek to crush Black Lives Matter. This again by Ajit, A-G-I-T, Singh, S-I-N-G-H. In recent days, the Black Lives Matter movement has been terrorized by white vigilante groups. Meanwhile, Hong Kong's, quote, pro-democracy, unquote, protests have served as a magnet for the U.S. and European far-right supporters. The ultra-right pilgrimages to Hong Kong have included numerous American white nationalists and Ukrainian neo-Nazis who previously fought in the fascist paramilitary group Azov Battalion. The interest has been mutual, with Hong Kong's Democrats, unquote, drawing inspiration from Ukraine's pro-Western Euromaidan revolution that has empowered far-right fascistic forces. Hong Kong protesters have embraced the slogan, Glory to Hong Kong, unquote, adapted from Slava Ukraini or Glory to Ukraine, a slogan invented by Ukrainian fascists and used by Nazi collaborators during World War II that was repopularized by the Euromaidan movement. No matter the difference between Ukraine and Hong Kong, our fights for freedom and democracy are the same, Joshua Wong told the Kiev Post in 2019. Again quoting, we have to learn from Ukrainians and show solidarity. Ukraine confronted the force of Russia. We are facing the force of Beijing. So again, when we look at Adrian Zenz, his use of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an outgrowth of the OUNB-ABN milieu, as the platform for his activism vis-a-vis Xinjiang. Note also that some of those same elements coming from the Azov Battalion are present in Hong Kong as well. And once again, as we looked at, and for the record, 1089 and 1090, the aforementioned William Casey co-founded National Endowment for Democracy is heavily involved with the financing of various personalities in the Hong Kong pro-democracy movement, including the aforementioned Joshua Wong. For the record, program 1030, we looked at the fact that the salute of the OUNB and the UPA has become the official salute of the Ukrainian army and the Ukrainian police. We also took a look at some of the glory, unquote, that manifested from that milieu during the brutal Ukraine-Polish War, sort of a war within a war in the Second World War. We will perhaps review that later on in this series. So again, note the ABN milieu involved with the MED and destabilization effort in Hong Kong, and note the OUNB milieu involved with Adrian Zenz and the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation as well. And keep in mind again the concept of the Earth Island and the concept of Ukraine as the central pivot point for that. And note also that the Glory to Hong Kong salute that was adapted from the OUN-UPA salute by the Hong Kong activists and Joshua Wong. Note that that has evolved into a song, basically a protest song, and the uncritical treatment accorded that by the New York Times is to be noted. This is the following from the New York Times of July 8th of 2020. It's by Jerry Mullany, M-U-L-L-A-N-Y. Hong Kong bans protest song and other political expression at schools, unquote. Hong Kong's education secretary on Wednesday banned students from singing the protest anthem Glory to Hong Kong, unquote, posting slogans with political messages or forming human chains, saying, quote, the schools are obliged to stop, unquote, such activities. I guess it is predictable that there is no discussion in this New York Times article of the genesis of the Glory to Hong Kong chant. Perhaps the author was not, journalist here was not aware of that. But again, the Glory to Hong Kong comes from the Glory to Ukraine. It comes from the salute of the OUN-UPA, now the official salute of the Ukrainian army and the police. So in both Xinjiang and also in Hong Kong, we see elements of the OUNB milieu that we've looked at for in so many different shows in connection with the coup in Ukraine, and really with politics stretching all the way from the pre-World War II period through the Second World War and the Galen Organization and the concretization of the CIA. One of the organizations that we have dealt with in that regard is the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, born in 1943, as the Committee of Subjugated Nations, as it was christened by Adolf Hitler. It is inextricably linked with the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, and as something of a bridge to our next program, we're going to look at networking between a guy named Ruzi, R-U-Z-I or R-U-Z-Y, Nazar, M-A-Z-A-R, named Nazarov. He was the representative of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations at Wackel's 1984 conference in Dallas, Texas. Nazar is originally from Uzbekistan, and he joined the Red Army, was captured in World War II, and then became an activist, an officer in the East Turkestan Legion, an organization that fought with the Wehrmacht, or for the Wehrmacht in World War II. Elements of it also evolved in the various Waffen-SS formations, as we looked at in AFA program number 21. We looked at Nazar in both AFA 14 and AFA 21, and we came back to him in a number of For the Record shows. Nazar went to work for the last Third Reich combatant organization with which he fought was the Dürrlewanger Brigade of Oskar Dürrlewanger, a notoriously cruel SS punishment unit. What we're going to look at here is a bridge to our next program and discussion of the World Uyghur Congress, and its founder is a fellow named Issa. Actually, let me find this here. His name is Issa Yusuf Alpekin, because Erkin Alpekin is his son and also became one of the central elements with that of networking between the aforementioned Ruzi Nazar, who infiltrated the National Action Party and whom we looked at in For the Record 14 and 21 as a CIA liaison with the National Action Party of Arpaslan Pirkesh. The following is something of a bridge. This is from a book that is all over the internet. It is pan-Turkist and very pro-Nazarist by Enver Altaylı, A-L-T-A-Y-L-I, translated by David Barshard. A Dark Path to Freedom, Ruzi Nazar from the Red Army to the CIA. Nazar, this is at the Bandung Conference in Indonesia of Non-Aligned Nations. Nazar did not have the right to speak at the conference, but he was able to organize a press conference for the journalists who had come from the four corners of the world to cover the event, including around 30 from the USSR. Ruzi told the press office of his plans, and they informed journalists and delegates of the press conference to be given by Ruzi Nazar, observer delegate from Turkestan, and a former officer in the Turkestan Legion. That, again, a fighting formation of the Third Reich. Ultimately, he went to work for the Dürrlewanger Brigade. More about Ruzi Nazar, skipping down. Seyit Şamil was the grandson of Sheikh Şamil, the national hero of the North Caucasus, who had fought for his independence against the armies of the Tsars. Seyit Şamil had wanted to come to Bandung along with the Uyghur leader Issa Yusuf Alpekin, the former Prime Minister of the Republic of East Turkestan, which had been broken up by Chinese armies in 1949. And again, note that he was networking, that is to say, Issa Yusuf Alpekin, networking with Ruzi Nazar. We'll come back to both Ruzi Nazar, Issa Yusuf Alpekin, and the World Uyghur Congress in our next program. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1143, The Uyghurs and the Destabilization of China, Part 1. This is being recorded on August 2nd of the year 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.